Amateur Radio Newsline report number 1947 with a release date of December 5th, 2014 to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. CEPT recommends new testing procedures for people with disabilities. The mysteries of NVIS propagation being studied down under. The Japan asteroid recovery mission carrying two ham radio satellites is launched. And graphene is in our future. Find out details on the Amateur Radio Newsline report number 1947, coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, here is Jim Davis, W2JKD.
A new recommendation adopted by the Electronic Communications Committee of the European Conference of Postal and Telecommunications Administrations, or CEPT, seeks to ease the access of persons with disabilities to license examinations for the amateur radio service. Amateur Radio Newsline's Heather Emby, KB3TZD, has the details.
Electronic Communications Committee Recommendation 1405 was drafted by the IARU Region 1 Regulatory Affairs Coordinator and was adopted by the committee back on October 10th. This followed a consultation process with several administrations providing comments. The recommendation notes that for persons with disabilities, participating in the amateur service is not only an important means of technical self-qualification by setting and achieving goals, but is also a way of integration into society by communicating with other persons of like interests. However, license examinations designed for non-disabled candidates can prove to be a significant impediment in obtaining the necessary qualifications to operate a station. Several administrations of CEPT member countries have already adopted practices to adapt amateur radio license examinations to the specific needs of candidates with disabilities. For other administrations, ECC Recommendation 1405 provides a framework for action. The document states that the examination syllabus should be identical for all candidates, but that testing procedures take into account the individual disability of the candidate as confirmed by an official document. Such procedures can include individual testing where appropriate and/or providing reasonable and additional examination time. Tests with diagram-free questions for the visually impaired could be replaced by questions provided in Braille. Lastly, examinations conducted in the home of candidates with severely limited mobility would be instituted. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Heather Emby, KB3TZD reporting.
How this procedure might be phased in is not explained in the press announcement. A link to this new recommendation in the CEPT database is in the PDF format at tinyurl.com/new-sept-testing-proposal. Near Vertical Incident Skywave Propagation, better known as NVIS, is turning in some rather interesting mysteries, as well as solving others, as we hear in this special report from VK2LAW of the Wireless Institute of Australia.
One of the most interesting findings is the inconsistency in the results of Near Vertical Incident Skywave Propagation, NVIS. Comparing a communications path between two amateur stations, Zulu Sierra 6 Kilo November and Zulu Sierra 6 Kilo Tango Sierra, a distance of 51 kilometres, it is interesting to note that on June 2014 there was a good communications path from just after 0500 until approximately 1630, after which the signals disappeared. The pattern for July was the same, but signals were considerably stronger than during August and September. During September, a strong dip in signal strength can be seen. The other interesting observation from the graph is that propagation opens earlier and closes later as we go into summer, which indicates variations in the ionization of the D layer of the ionosphere as the sun rises earlier and sets later. Not enough data has been collected to make any meaningful conclusions. If the path was pure ground wave, the signals would have been more or less constant throughout the day or night.
Obviously, it's going to take a few more seasons of research to truly find the limitations of NVIS propagation, as well as to fully understand its characteristic. Japan has successfully launched its round-trip Hayabusa 2 asteroid sample return mission with a pair of amateur radio payloads along for part of the ride, as we hear from Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF.
The mission was carried into space on board a Japan Aerospace Exploration Agency launch vehicle on December 3rd. The primary payload is the Hayabusa 2 spacecraft on the first leg of its exploration and recovery journey to asteroid 1999 JU3. Along for the ride into the final frontier are two amateur radio satellites named Xian-2 and Artsat-2 Dispatch. The Xian-2 carries a 1/10 of a watt CW beacon downlinking on 437.505 MHz and a telemetry downlink on 437.385 MHz. Also on board is a digital store and forward transponder with an uplink on 2 meters at 145.942 MHz and a micro power downlink at 435.270 MHz. ArtSat 2 Dispatch carries a 7-watt Morse transmitter on 437.325 MHz. Its controllers say that they are seeking the assistance from hams here on Earth as part of a global monitoring system that it calls a Cooperative Diversity Communications Experiment. This effort will try to intercept signals from the spacecraft by properly equipped radio amateurs around the world, in addition to those heard and recorded at the Mission Control Center located in Tokyo, Japan. The hope is to reconstruct the original data that's transmitted from the spacecraft. Each payload has its own website with tracking and other technical details. Xian-2 is at tinyurl.com/xian-2-online. ArtSat-2 Dispatch can be found at tinyurl.com/artsat-2-in-space. And for the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, in the newsroom here in Los Angeles.
We'll have more ham radio space-related news later on in this week's report. In DX up front, 3Z9, DX, K7CO, and TI2HMJ will be active as TI9A from Cocos Island between February 16th and the 23rd of 2015. It's been 6 years since the last TI9 operation, and because of this, Coco is ranked 26th on the most wanted list. The boat trip to the island will begin on February 14th, 2015. It takes 30 hours from Costa Rica. Their radio permit is issued for 7 days only, and that means they can operate for only about 6 days, but are also in possession of a second permit, which allows them to stay on the island overnight, and thereby a 24-hour operation. They will be using two radios on 80 through 10 meters, CW, sideband, and RIDI. You can QSL via 3Z9DX as directed at www.nielsen.net/TI9A. Also, LA9JKA will be on Bear Island for a work assignment until May 2015. In his free time, he plans to operate on all HF bands and 6 meters. QSL via LA9JKA direct only. Time for you to identify your station. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the Radio Society of Okinawa Emergency Services Net. A Stafford, Arizona radio station is back on the air after an employee of KJIK-FM allegedly set fire to the station in early November and then stuck around to watch it burn. Amateur Radio Newsline's Jim Dameron, NATMW, has more.
Shortly after 1 a.m. local time, Graham County Dispatch received an anonymous call about a structure fire at the radio station. When officers arrived, they noticed smoke pouring out of the building and a man, later identified as Scott Lewis Wellbaum, standing in the parking lot watching. Wellbaum was told to leave the area but informed officers he was an employee of the station, and there was a significant amount of expensive equipment inside. The Safford Fire Department then responded to the scene and extinguished the fire. According to reports, Safford Fire Chief Clark Bingham advised the fire was possibly arson. Officers then learned the anonymous phone call had been placed at a payphone at Walmart across the highway. A Thatcher officer responded to review surveillance footage from the store and saw a man he believed to be Wellbaum approach and use a payphone at the time of the tip. The subject was also wearing the same clothes as Wellbaum. The suspect and two other employees who also have keys to the building were then taken to the Safford Police Department to be interviewed. During his interview, Welbaum allegedly became hostile toward the officers. When presented with a warrant to search his vehicle, which was also parked at the scene, police say that Welbaum acted as though he was going to throw a computer and had to be talked down by an officer pointing his taser at him. After a short struggle, Welbaum was handcuffed and transported to the jail, where a search revealed he was in possession of 5 green-tipped wood matches. He was then booked on a charge of alleged arson. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jim Dameron, NATMW reporting.
More on the web at tinyurl.com/radio-station-arson-ch. The European Amateur Radio Organization, together with the 30 Meter Digital Group, announced a new CUSO party with the motto, Be Digital and Explore 30 Meters. The party will be held the weekend of December 20th and the 21st from 0000 to 2400 UTC. This is not a contest, but rather a radio meeting with a few simple recommendations to follow. You can find them at tinyurl.com/explore-30-meters. F5CWU reports that a slideshow covering the 2014 Tromelin Island FT4TA operation is now available for viewing on the World Wide Web. The show is made up from the selected photos out of thousands that were taken beginning with the approach by air to the island. You can see them with either French or English captioning at tinyurl.com/Tromelin-2014-photos. A video of the expedition is being edited and will hopefully be available in early 2015. The Radio Society of Great Britain has announced the appointment of Philip Willis, M0PHI, as the new chairman of its Training and Education Committee. Willis succeeds Steve Hartley, who is G0FUW. During the entire month of December, stations with several mainly IARU Region 1 countries will be on the air seeking contacts using YOTA as their call sign suffix. Youth on the Air, or YOTA, is growing quickly, and with it being reported that every week more youngsters are asking to participate. YOTA stations are trying to make many contacts, so please take this opportunity to connect young amateurs in their teens and their 20s with their peers on the air. To quote the Radio Society of Great Britain, by making YOTH popular, we can help all get more youngsters active in amateur radio. The German national public broadcaster Deutschlandfunk and Deutschlandradio, Koltar, will disappear from Longwave at the end of this year. According to Bulgarian DX blog, the money saved will be invested in digital terrestrial radio, such as DAB+. At the end of 2015, the medium wave transmitters of Deutschlandfunk will also close. Deutschlandfunk still broadcasts on Longwave at 153 and 207 kHz. It also maintains several medium wave frequencies, including 1269 and 549 kHz. Deutschlandradio Koltar broadcasts by means of the longwave frequency of 177 kHz. Their medium wave frequency is 990 kHz. That went off last year. The QRZ call sign database lookup and general ham radio discussion website has announced its new subscriber rewards program. According to the website's manager, subscriber rewards is their way of saying thanks to subscribers upon whose support they depend to keep the site running. Every Wednesday, QRZ will choose a subscriber to win a free prize. All current QRZ subscribers are eligible regardless of their subscription plan. If your call sign page has a QRZ subscriber badge, then you're eligible to win. QRZ.com will announce each week's new winner on its homepage in the Ham Radio News Forum. They'll also keep you posted on Facebook and Twitter. The ARRL says that the deadline to accept nominations for its 2014 International Humanitarian Award is December 31st. This award is conferred on an amateur or amateurs who demonstrate devotion to human welfare, peace, and international understanding through amateur radio. Nominations should include a summary of the nominee's qualifying actions and statements from at least two people having firsthand knowledge of the events warranting the nomination. These verifying statements may be from an official of a group such as an emergency management agency that benefited from the nominee's particular amateur radio contribution. Nominations should include the names and addresses of all references. All nominations and supporting materials must be submitted in English to the ARRL International Humanitarian Award, 225 Main Street, Newington, Connecticut, 06111. The League says that this established an annual prize to recognize individuals who have used amateur radio to provide extraordinary service to others in times of crisis or disaster. This is Ham Radio News for today's Radio Amateur. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline with links to the world from our only official website at www.arnewsline.org and being relayed by the volunteer services of the following Radio Amateur. SpinSat was successfully deployed from the International Space Station on the afternoon of Friday, November 28th. Developed by the Naval Research Laboratory, SpinSat is a 56-centimeter sphere weighing 57 kilograms that has 12 electronically controlled solid propellant thrusters spread in pairs throughout the surface of the satellite. They will be fired in pairs to spin the spacecraft. SpinSat's primary mission will be to calibrate the space surveillance network. Lasers will be fired at SpinSat from the ground. The light reflected back will be measured to determine where in time and space the satellite is passing overhead. SpinSat will also model the density of the atmosphere. The IARU Satellite Frequency Coordination Panel reports that SpinSat carries a 2-watt RF output, 9600 bit per second AX.25 packet radio store to forward the system on 437.230 megahertz. The Cyclops deployment system was used to release the satellite from the airlock of the Japanese experiment module. With just primary batteries for power and only 4.8 grams of fuel, the spin-up phase may last between 3 to 6 months. Dhruva Space, a 2-year-old startup co-founded by technologist Sanjay Nakanti, VU3ISS, has sealed the deal with AMSAT India to develop HAMSAT 2. This as a successor to HAMSAT VO52, which went silent on July 11th, most likely due to failure of its onboard lithium batteries. Dhruva's satellites are expected to be launched on the Indian Space Research Organization's Polar Satellite Launch Vehicle. Nakanti said his team is working closely with the space organization for design approvals and testing of the planned new satellite. The United Kingdom's Surrey Space Center is developing a 3-unit-sized CubeSat called SME-SAT that's expected to launch into a 550 to 620-kilometer orbit in the not-too-distant future. The primary objective of this project is to involve small to medium-sized enterprises from the terrestrial sector on a space project and allow them to space-qualify their technology. SME-SAT brings together one of the largest small to medium-based consortiums ever to develop advanced space technologies based on terrestrial applications. This will enable them to fully space-qualify their technologies within 3 years of the mission start date. Now, this project represents a unique, unprecedented space mission, fostering a new alliance between smaller companies, universities, and a large-scale space integrator, and all took high-risk technologies, and they will develop them to fully test in space using CubeSats. The satellite will provide beacons for amateur radio satellite users worldwide to be able to receive. More's on the web now at tinyurl.com/SME-SAT-UK. Europe's fifth Galileo satellite, one of two delivered into a wrong orbit by a Soyuz frigate launcher last August, has transmitted its first navigation signal in space on Saturday, 29 November 2014. A detailed test operation is now underway, now that the satellite has reached a more suitable orbit for navigation purposes. NDX, YB4IR, will be active stroke 8 from Bandaria Island between December the 22nd and the 27th. Operations will be on 80 through 10 meters using CW, single sideband, and RIDI. QSL via his home call sign, direct or by the Bureau or Logbook of the World. N7XR will be active as VQ9XR for his operations in 2014 and 2015. These were to have started on or about December the 3rd for approximately 3 weeks on 160 through 10 meters with a focus on CW, sideband, and RIDI. He may use the call sign V92XR instead, which gives the prefix hunters a new one to go after. Either way, please QSL via his home call sign direct only. 3W3B, who lives in Da Nang, has announced that he'll be active during the ARRL International DXCW contest February 21st and 22nd as a single op / all band / high power entry, QSL via E21 EIC or Logbook of the World. Lastly, DL2GAN will be visiting Nepal for a short-term operation as 9N7CB from Kathmandu, scheduled for the end of December. His plan is to be operational on Christmas Eve, which will be about 8 a.m. to 12 noon UTC on December the 24th. Depending on propagation, bands of operation will be 14 and or 21 megahertz single sideband or CW if the propagation is poor. QSL via his home call sign, direct or via the Bureau. And finally this week, with only a few nanometers thick, graphene is being touted by some in the scientific world as the new steel of the 21st century. Amateur Radio Newsline's Stephen Kinford reports.
Introduced to the world about a decade ago, graphene is a multi-layered material that is somewhere between 10 and 100 nanometers thick. This makes the material more like a very thin sheet of carbon. As a matter of fact, the material is so thin that it appears to be more like a sheet of paper, but thinner. But even at that extreme thinness, graphene can hold weights that are 100 times heavier than steel. And graphene is an extremely good conductor of both heat and electricity. But the most important aspect found so far is that graphene can dissipate huge amounts of energy. Jay Huang Lee of the University of Massachusetts Department of Mechanical and Industrial Engineering is a graphene researcher. He and his team say that the ability of graphene to dissipate energy is due to a high degree of stiffness combined with low density. This means that energy can move through it very quickly. What might this mean to those involved in emergency response work? Many things, including something as simple as dropping a handheld radio onto concrete and it not even being scratched. More important, that it continues to work as if nothing at all has happened. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Stephen Kinford, and 8WB reporting.
More on this latest scientific advance is on the web at wikipedia.org/wiki/graphene. With thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the ARRL, CQ Magazine, the FCC, the Ohio Penn DX Bulletin, RAIN, the RSGB, the South African Radio League, the Southgate News, Twit TV, Australia's WIE News, and you, our listeners, that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website, located at www.arnewsline.org. You can also write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. For now, with Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF at the editor's desk, I'm Jim Davis, W2JKD, saying 73, and we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2014. All rights are reserved.